Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset Podcast with Kate Newdecker. Today I am joined by someone who I've looked up to in the industry since I became a coach myself. He's probably best known for training the entrepreneur Gary Vee, who, if you don't know, you've probably been living under a rock. He's actually incredibly knowledgeable about his field in strength and conditioning, powerlifting, fat loss. So I'm really pleased to be joined by Jordan Syatt today. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am awesome. How are you?
I am delightful. Can I just say, I do a lot of podcasts, but just solely based on the British accent, it's so much cooler doing it with you.
Thank you so much.
It sounds like it's just this official news show that we're getting on. It's like, welcome to the show. We're with someone who trains Gary Vee. I love it.
Do you know what though, like, I literally every time I do that people are really taken back by it, like, what is that introduction, like, where did it even come from? It's like I'm on the West End Broadway or something, like, yeah.
It's very professional. I like it a lot.
good. So I mean, would you like to give the listeners, if they don't know who you are, and which I'm sure they probably do anyway, do you want to give them a bit of a background on who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Jordan Syatt, and I'm a fitness coach, strength coach, nutrition coach. I have the most amazing mom in the world, Andrea, God bless her, and I am obsessed with Harry Potter. I've read the books way more times than almost anybody should, and I don't think the movies are that good, but I do still like them just because, you know, by association. And I would say that my goal with fitness is to try and help people fit fitness into their life rather than trying to fit their life into fitness.
Amazing. So, I mean, you've had quite an interesting start to your career as a coach. And what was your first job as a coach? It's a really interesting story. I know it myself, but what was your first job?
So my first job in the industry, I was 14 years old, and I was wrestling. So I wrestled from 8 to 18, wrestled my whole life, but like from 8 years old to 18. And then at 14, when I was a freshman, I made freshman as a varsity, and I had to cut a lot of weight. So I was cutting from 112 pounds to 103 pounds. And I was a good technical wrestler, and I was good endurance wise, but my strength wasn't really there. So I started to like really try and learn about strength training as well as how to get stronger while losing fat. And I ended up applying to a job in my town, and I was denied that job. And then I applied to a job in a town over from me, in a town called Newton, and they took me under their wing. And from 14 years old, they just, like, they taught me everything. They really did an amazing job in a number of ways, but they started me out as an intern. And I was like, I'll do anything. I'll clean the floors. I'll take the trash out. Just let me learn. And that's how I started with them. And then eventually they let me teach group class warm-ups. And then they let me teach group classes. And then eventually they were giving me one-on-one clients. But it took a while to work up to that. And I remember my first ever client, his name is Fred, 68 years old. He had shoulder problems, hip problems, knee problems. And his goal specifically was to be able to play with his grandchild and pick his grandchild up without any pain. So as a young teenager who, like, your mindset's in a totally different place, mm-hmm. All I thought about was maximum strength and performance and getting shredded, da da da. So to have that at a really young age, I was put into a situation where I learned that there were many, many goals and many ways to achieve certain goals. And I was just fortunate to be around people and coaches who understood that and helped me see the broader scope of things rather than being so narrow-minded. So that was my first job.
And what was it about that job in particular? Obviously, being a personal trainer is quite glamorized, and people think that you're going to be training like superstars and like doing loads of like bodybuilding competitions and that kind of thing. What was it about that particular job and working with people who, you know, wanted to run after their children and not get out of breath? What was it that gave you the impetus and the motivation to keep coaching?
Well, that was the whole thing, and that's a great question, by the way. No one's ever asked me that. I like it when I get questions that haven't been asked. That's a really good question. The whole thing of it is that just confirmed that I loved coaching. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people get into coaching because either they like going to the gym and they think it'll be good for them because then they can be in the gym all day, or they think that it'll be easy, or they think that they'll be able to make a lot of money very quickly, and they don't do it because they love coaching. And what that affirmed for me was that I loved coaching. I loved coaching Fred. I loved coaching firefighters. I loved coaching mothers. I loved coaching mothers-to-be. Mm-hmm. I loved coaching couples. I loved coaching high school kids. I loved coaching. I just loved the experience of it. And from that point, it was a no-brainer. Like, I could do a 10-hour day in the gym coaching, and it would be exhausting, and it would be really tough, but I would go home really happy versus, mm-hmm. versus doing a job that I hate for 6, 7, 8 hours a day and making it feel like it was just never going to end. I could do an extra long day of coaching, and I would just love it versus something else that I hated, and I could do it for less total time, but it would feel like an eternity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of what you get back from the job. It's the helping people and like teaching them ways to help themselves. And obviously what you get back is in return is a huge, huge amount. And I think when you are helping the general public, a lot of the time you are teaching a lot of mindset tips and a lot of little kind of mindset hacks along the way into adopting new habits. What is one of the most common things you see people struggle with when they try to adopt new habits, for example?
The most common thing I see people struggle with when adopting new habits, I think it's the all or nothing black and white that mm-hmm. has to be done this way mindset, where if, for example, they are going to start counting calories, mm-hmm. then a lot of times they'll get so strict that, like, if they go, God forbid, 12 calories over, then they think they failed and they ruined everything. Or if they're doing keto and they even want to have a carb, never mind eat a carb, like, they feel like they're a failure. If they're intermittent fasting and they eat outside of their eating window, they feel like they're a failure. And it's learning to show them and teach them that it's not all or nothing. It's not black and white. It's not you can't fail this as long as you get back on track. And teaching people that it's more about flexibility over rigidity and consistency over rigidity is really where the game is won, not being so unbelievably like restricting and strict throughout your entire life. So I think that's where most people tend to fall into a trap.
Absolutely. And do you think that black and white mentality, it is a massive contributor to why people overeat as well?
Yeah, for sure. Because a lot of times overeating, it's not usually from hunger. Mm-hmm. Very rarely are people overeating solely because, oh, I'm so hungry. In fact, a lot of times they know in their head, like, I'm not hungry. I want to stop, but they can't. It's more of an emotional hand-to-mouth versus a physical, I need to eat. And so usually people will overeat on a consistent basis because they feel like they failed. They feel as though mm-hmm. they already screwed up. And so, well, what's the point? I might as well keep screwing up. Or they've been so deprived for so long because they were trying to be perfect that once they finally let loose, yeah. all of a sudden it's uncontrollable. And that's where overeating a lot of times stems from, not as opposed to just actual hunger.
Yeah. And what would you say are if you had a client, for example, who was having a particular problem with overeating, what would be the key steps you take them through into having better eating, more regular eating habits and trying to overcome that issue?
The two steps that I would do for clients with overeating issues?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. Or like what steps, not necessarily like two, like if you were going to take a client through certain steps to help them overcome it for themselves, what would they be?
So it really, and I know it's a cop-out answer, it does depend on the client and what yeah. they're going through and what they're struggling with. But generally, I would say number one, the first lesson I'll always, always give someone is the you can't fuck this up lesson. Yeah. Because so much of it stems from that, well, I failed and I fucked up, so I might as well, like, what's the point? And they use that as an excuse to continue driving that. And so once you take that excuse away and once they can internalize, you know what, like, I didn't fuck this up, I just get back on track, it very quickly gives them the opportunity to, they don't feel like a failure anymore. So it takes away that emotional need to binge or, like, that excuse that allows them to continue it. So that's always step number one, is showing them that they can't fuck it up. And then from there, another one that I'll do is I call them bright lines.
Yeah.
And it's bright lines are coming up with very specific and deliberate rules that are like, this is my rule. This is like an unbreakable law that I will follow. And it sounds very rigid, and it sounds like it's almost the opposite of flexible dieting. But what it allows you to do is it allows you to pick and choose what you are flexible with without feeling guilty, without feeling restricted. So, for example, a very simple bright line might be, if you're going to go to a party, then you can have as much dessert as you want. But the bright line is you can only have one of the desserts. So if there's six different, there's a like an apple pie and then a fucking cannolis and this and that, then
what's basically, a cannoli?
What's up?
What's a cannoli?
Shut the fuck up. You don't know what a cannoli is?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Are you out of your mind?
No, literally. I don't know what a cannoli is. All I can think of is like cannelloni, like lasagna.
Holy shit. Well, I mean, it's Italian, so you're on the right, you're in the right group of people. It's an amazing, delicious, heavenly, spectacular, delectable piece of heaven wrapped in a like crusty, circular, cylindrical thing that has cream inside. It's remarkable. The fact that you don't know what a fucking cannoli is the most mind-boggling thing I've ever heard this week.
I literally hadn't even heard of it before.
Holy shit. Your job is to get a cannoli, but okay, anyway, yeah. Going back to the point is if there's like seven different things, you can have one.
Yeah.
And that's a great bright line. Number one, research consistently shows that calories like linearly go up with more options. So you're not necessarily restricting yourself. You can't say, I'm not having dessert. You can say, you can have as much dessert as you want, but just choose one, and that's the only dessert you can have. And that will inherently reduce the amount of calories that you eat, and it will allow you to not feel restricted, like you aren't allowed to have it. So that's one example of a bright line. Another bright line might be, like, you just limit yourself to how much you'll eat. So I'll have one plate for dinner and one plate for dessert, and that'll be it. And I will not have another plate. Or I could be the only things I'll eat are once they're plated. And there's a never-ending amount of options for bright lines. But what this does is it sets a rule for yourself that's unbreakable, and you can't set a bright line that you don't actually mean. For example, I was working with a client recently who she set bright lines, and she was like, "Yeah, you know, I haven't really been sticking to them." And I was like, okay, well then we need to rethink this, because when we set a bright line, that is like literally an unbreakable law. And if you aren't really, and I asked her, I was like, well, why do you think you're breaking them? Why do you think you're not following them? And she was like, well, to be honest, I guess I just feel like I don't really want this goal as bad as I said I did. And it's a very eye-opening experience for some people, because if you're not following them, then it goes back to, well, what do you really want to accomplish? And sometimes I think people are so – they see the like fat loss and getting shredded is like the goal for so many. And sometimes they feel obligated to continue that goal until they reach this ideal physique that society puts on us. And it can be weird for people to be like, you know what, maybe my goal isn't fat loss. Maybe I'm not that motivated for it. Maybe I'd be focused on something else. So we just readjusted, figured out what her goals actually were, which were more strength related. And then we didn't even need to make bright lines for that stuff. And now all of a sudden she doesn't have to really focus on it. And she's doing very well because she's not trying to reach a goal that she doesn't really care about at this point. So that's sort of a huge tangent, but just going back to the thing, number one, you can't fuck up. Number two, create some bright lines based around what your actual like definitive rules are. And from there, you plug and play based on the person. Maybe instead of taking out certain foods, you add in more food. So instead of taking out carbs, you add in more fruits and vegetables, and inherently they'll end up eating less. But there are a million ways to go about it, but I'd say those first two are most important.
I think those are really important because they cut anxiety out of the situation because you're cutting decisions out of the situation. And therefore, people can just stick to that, one rule, and then that's going to help them as well. You mentioned there a little bit about how people, they think they want weight loss. They think they want like these goals that are kind of impressed on them, like in the media and like magazines and that kind of thing. How would you go from taking something that's like that, that's quite tangible for someone, like, oh, I want a six pack, and then go, yeah, but you don't actually want this, you want strength? How does it go from someone wanting a six pack to someone actually realizing they want a strength goal?
Well, so it sort of has to come through conversation, and it can't ever be something, in my experience, it can't be something that I tell them. I can't say, well, you don't actually want this, because just human psychology and behavior, you tell someone you don't want this or you can't have this, all of a sudden they're going to be like, well, fuck you, and they're going to like be sort of standoffish. So it's sort of being able to, and there's a text based around this strategy. It's called motivational interviewing. Mm-hmm. And it's being able to structure the conversation in a way that allows the other person to explain not only what they want, but also maybe come up with strategies for how they can achieve it. And so that's actually a major portion of how I coach.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily saying you have to do this. It's saying, hey, well, why don't you give me one or two ways that you think that you'll be able to achieve this? And then I'll give you my thoughts from there. So my clients and Inner Circle members, they come up with their own plans. And mm-hmm. in doing so, they are more likely to stick with them because it's their idea. A lot of times I help them get to that point, but I don't say, you do this. A lot of times I'll help them come to the point where they can come up with their own plan, and I'll say, hey, that's a great idea. I love that. That's a great option. Like, how about, what do you think about adding this on or taking this? And they're like, oh, that's great. I can add that. And they're excited because it's their plan and they came up with it, not me being like, hey, fucker, you have to do what I'm telling you. And all of a sudden, like, they're not standing off, they're more open to it. So. Yeah.
I can imagine if you say that to someone, they're probably not going to, you know, be too warm and friendly about it, to be honest. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. And even if I don't call them a fucker, if I just like, hey, listen, like, you're not doing it. You need to be, if you're, like, clearly you're not serious about this. Like, very few people respond well to that type of a scenario.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I go about that. And then. Yeah, does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. Would you say that maybe, obviously there's 110 million like meal plans on the internet, like, and would you say that that's their major downfall in one way, and that it's a very rigid plan that's applied to everyone and it hasn't got anything to do with the individual in mind? Would you say that's probably the downfall of meal plans on the internet?
I would say that the downfall is twofold. Number one being that there's so many.
Yeah.
And when there's so many, people generally tend to like to categorize things as good or bad, mm-hmm. right or wrong, the best or the worst. So when there's so many, a lot of people are like, well, I just don't know which one is best. And they're like, and they're sort of lost in paralysis by analysis because they don't know which one that is actually going to be the best, when in reality, they could probably stick to any of them. And as long as they were consistent, it would work. But that's number one. There's so many, they're not sure what to choose. And number two is, my major gripe with meal plans in general is they tell you what foods to eat at what time, and it's very, this is the right food at the right time, and this is it, and this is all you can follow. And even if they say, like, hey, you can swap a different protein in, or you can swap a different carb in, it's difficult, especially for a beginner, to look at that and say, okay, well, I'll swap it out, because they just want to follow exactly what's laid out, because they think that what's laid out for them is the right way. Mm-hmm. And so when all of a sudden that they go on vacation or they go on a work trip or they just want to take a break from it, they don't know what to do because all of a sudden that definitive plan isn't there. And so it's like, well, if this plan isn't here, then I'm going to fuck up and I might as well just go all out. And then they really end up binging because they don't have that definitive plan. I would rather teach people how to enjoy their favorite foods in moderation than necessarily say you have to eat this specific food at this time of day.
Yeah, teach them how to fish, really, rather than like give them the tools to do it rather than just like telling them what to do instead.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you mentioned there a little bit about the black and white and the good and bad, and it's really, really common. And without me being like, oh, on social media, there's so much like bad stuff, like which I don't really want to do. There is a lot of polarization on social media between something is really, really good and something is really, really bad. And that's only because people tend to like that. Why do you think people like these black and whites?
Generally speaking, we want to know what's right or wrong or good or bad because it's easier for us to know what the best decision is if it's that simple. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, so this is the right way, this is the wrong way. This is the right, this is the good way, this is the bad way. This is the healthy way, this is the unhealthy way. And when you have those polarizations of right and wrong and good and bad and do and do not, then it's easy to say, okay, so there are two paths. And it's just simple. You just go down that path. Mm-hmm. But when it's more gray area, which is really where things tend to lie, and when it's much more ambiguous and not just so black and white, it creates, rather than having two individual paths, like a fork in the road, now you literally just have an open football field that you can walk on, and you don't know what the most efficient path to get to the finish line is. And I think that's where people really screw themselves because they're looking for the most efficient linear path to get to the end zone, to the finish line, to the point where they've finally achieved the end result. And they look at it as that there's this end goal, there's this end date, this end time. And for me, one of my most important things I can say is, listen, there is no end date. There is no day or moment in which you're going to look and say, I have finally achieved all of it. That doesn't exist. This is a constant, never-ending process of trying to improve, because once you reach your goal, odds are you're already going to have other goals that you want to achieve. Very rarely you'll be like, all right, I'm here and I'm done now. It's like always like, well, what's next? What's better? It's one of those reasons why a lot of times people will look back at pictures of themselves from 10 years ago, or even like 5, 10, whatever years ago, and be like, oh my God, do you see how good I looked then? But when they actually were taking that picture, a lot of times they're like, ugh, I look so bad right now. And they don't like it. And they didn't even want to see the picture. And it took 5 or 10 years later to be like, oh my God, you see how good I looked? And it's because very rarely can people be in the moment and be content with what's going on. And it's important. Like one of my major things I always say is always, always optimistic, never satisfied. So you can be in the moment and you can be happy with who you are and optimistic with where you're going, but not necessarily always being satisfied and always wanting more. I think it's a good mindset, but most people tend to be in the moment actually, whether they want to admit it or not, pessimistic and negative towards themselves, very self-deprecating, not happy or optimistic with where they are. And then it takes getting to a point in the future and looking back to realize, oh my God, I can't believe I was so hateful towards myself, because looking back now, I would give anything to be back there. And it's like, that it is, again, another huge rant, but it goes back to the point of really understanding there's no end date in which you'll finally reach this goal. Understanding it's a long-term process, and that if you're always trying to find like the shortcut to the end goal, you'll never be happy. You'll never be there. Like, understanding it's a long-term process and being okay with just taking it slow and steady, getting accustomed to looking at failure as a good thing rather than a bad thing. You know, say, hey, listen, this is another lesson learned in the process, because so many people, they put so much effort into avoiding failure that they never achieve anything at all. When in reality, if they were just okay with failing and pushing forward, they would end up achieving so much more over the long term.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot to do with self-worth, because you said about being content where you are right now. Would you say that's a massive contributor to actually maintaining weight? Say if someone's lost a lot of weight, having that level of self-worth and self-esteem in the first place is actually going to help them maintain the weight when they've lost it, if they've got that underneath, that strong foundation.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think the bigger part of it, more than necessarily just like being content with who you are, is being confident in the knowledge that you aren't all of a sudden going to lose all of your progress. I think most people, they get very nervous, because a lot of times people will reach a certain weight, they'll lose a certain amount of weight, and then they'll need to go on a diet break. It'll be a good point for them to say, hey, I'm going to take a little break from a deficit for now. And they get really nervous because, like, well, I'm not actually where I want to be yet. And if I go into maintenance, then I'll lose all my progress, or I haven't earned the right to go to maintenance yet. And it's like, if you can fully understand that just because you're going to increase calories and go to maintenance, it doesn't mean that you're losing progress. It means that it's actually being able to maintain a lower weight than what you were before is progress. The example I always use is if you go on a train ride and, like, you're on your train to work and you get you're all along the train, you're halfway there and the train makes a stop. When the train stops, you don't say, oh, fuck it, and get off the train and start going back home. It's like, no, you sit there and you wait until everybody's off the train and the new people come on the train and you keep going and you go to work. It's the same thing with maintenance. If you can understand that, hey, you're basically just maintaining where you are for right now in a brief period of time so that you can then go back to taking action and moving forward, that's progress. Versus a lot of people, they look at it as, oh, shit, well, I might as well just go off track and go off the rails. And then they backtrack. And that's where the perpetual yo-yo dieting and binge eating comes into play. So, yes, I think this is something I was thinking about the other day, and I want to make a post on this. I'm just not sure how to word it yet, which is why I haven't. Everyone says, you have to love yourself. You have to love who you are. You have to, like, love yourself now. And I'm like, well, yeah, but how the fuck do you do that? Like, we're just telling people to love themselves. We're not giving them any actual practical help to help them love themselves. It's sort of like saying, like, listen, it's like motivation doesn't help you with the long term. Like, habits do. And that's where they end their post. I'm like, well, how the fuck are people supposed to know what habits they should be doing if you're not telling them how to build a habit? Yeah. It doesn't make a difference if you're not actually teaching them what to do. So I think loving yourself is one of the most important aspects of it. But as coaches, I think, and as an industry, we need to do a better job of not just saying you should love yourself and actually teaching people how to love themselves.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that I saw on social media a lot, like about a year ago, and I've spoken to you about it, but it's something that I was trying to do about a year ago. And seeing all these posts being like, oh, just love yourself the way where you are. I was like, how? Literally, how am I supposed to do that? If you've had sort of magazines, diet culture kind of rammed down your throat for your whole life, how are you supposed to go from that to then just loving yourself, in inverted commas? So it's so, so true. If there's actionable steps for people, then they'll be able to do it. But I think there's a lot of that, though, of just motivational quotes, like be your own motivation. And like you said, if you look back at old photos, people might not find that motivating to look back at the way they once were. And I mean, have you seen that with people where you use old photos and old clothes, for example, as motivation? Or do you think that's more detrimental?
I think it really does depend on the person. I think some people love it and some people hate it. But by and large, what I've found is I've never met someone who was not happy with their body, or they're very overweight, or they'd been out of the game for a while. I've never met a single person in that situation who was happy to take before pictures, but every single person who's really put in a lot of effort and made a lot of work was always happy afterward that they did, because then they could compare them. But I mean, I think it really does depend on the person. Some people are really, in the same way that some people are very motivated and follow fitness accounts of people who are shredded and ripped because it motivates them to see someone else who's like that, and other people, it just completely turns them off and, like, they don't like following that type of account. It really is dependent on the person.
Yeah. And I mentioned it a little bit there, and I've seen a lot on social media recently about more things in diet culture, like fit tees, waist trainers, and it's like there's a big rebellion against diet culture, and it's almost like some people are starting to throw personal trainers into the mix about encouraging diet culture. Would you think that maybe we are part of the problem in encouraging weight loss with people?
That's an interesting question. I'm sure that we're part of the problem in many ways. Yeah. But I don't think it's because here's the thing. People are always going to want to lose weight.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, there are always going to be people, and that's okay. And that's not a bad thing. If you want to lose weight, fucking more power to you. I mean, realistically, in the United States, at least, like, the majority of people are overweight or obese, and I know it's like definitely making moves across the world. It's like obesity is an epidemic, mm-hmm. and it's one of the major reasons people are dying early and getting heart disease and cardiovascular disease, and it's very important to help people do that safely and effectively and help them reach a healthier body weight. I don't think losing weight is inherently a bad thing. I think the bad issues come from when people are actually shamed from what, which has been another huge thing lately. It's like people are shamed for the goal of wanting to lose weight, and they feel bad for it. And one of the things I hate most in the recent several years is the phrase "strong is the new skinny." Yeah, I fucking hate that. It's taking this phrase that like people, it's basically the people who weren't really, really skinny, and now they felt like, oh my god, like I was always being shamed for not being skinny, and now they're shaming people who aren't the way that they are now, and it's their way. It's like, because I know people who are very skinny who are very self-conscious to go to a gym or to talk to their friends about it because they feel like they will be immediately shamed and put down, and they have been. It's like, I think it's not so much that we're causing the problem inherently. I think it's that people in general, including personal trainers, but in general, they often go towards these extremes that will put some people down, whether they consciously realize it or not. Like, saying strong is the new skinny is fucking ridiculous. Like, you can say, hey, I want to be strong, and strong is great. And if you want to be skinny, skinny's great too. And we can be strong and skinny fucking friends, and that's awesome. And that's the whole end of story. You don't have to say, like, one is better than the other. I think that's when people run into trouble, when we create this polarization and extremism of, like, one is better than the other.
Yeah, it's amazing how there always seems to have to be teams. There always seems to have to be some side that you have to pick. And it's just, it's very much so that there isn't a side. You just got to have a really open mind and just not shame anyone for their body, because everyone's different. And I think that's probably a really good standpoint that you have. Have you personally, obviously, as a personal trainer, we're very aware of the way we look and aesthetics and inverted commas. And have you ever been, got a little bit too much into the aesthetic sides of things, or how you look or how much you weigh?
Yeah. So when I was younger, when I was 18 and 19, I got very into like being as lean as possible. And so, I mean, I worked with Martin Birkin when I was 18 years old in my first year of college. And, that's when I really started to dive into the nutrition side of things and understand how it works. And I got shredded, and I definitely, focused a lot on that. And I think one of the reasons I was fortunate enough to get out of that, especially in a very relatively quickly, is because I gave myself a 3-month window where I was like, I'm going to work with Martin for 3 months. I'm going to get as shredded as possible. Mm-hmm. And after that, I had promised several people at my school that I was going to start the powerlifting team. So I had sort of created, without knowing, this is total by accident. This is the first time I ever really realized it, but I created a deadline for myself. I was like, all right, I've got 3 months to like be outrageously obsessive with my food and my physique. And then after that, I'm going to start powerlifting and start the powerlifting team, and that'll be it. There was carryover into when I started the powerlifting team 3 months later, and I still like didn't want to gain an ounce of body fat, and there was carryover for probably the better part of a year. But by transferring into more of a powerlifting focus and a strength focus, I was very quickly able to get out of the focusing so much on being as low body fat as possible and focus more on getting as strong as possible. Not to mention, just as an athlete my whole life, for the majority of my life, the vast majority, I've always cared more about how I performed over how I looked. And that was, I think, a major benefit for me, because for I'd say 95% of my career in fitness, it's been more about how much I can lift, how fast I am, how athletic I am, much more than, you know, what percent body fat I am.
Yeah. And you've recently started boxing, and that's in preparation for a fight, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So why have you decided to do a fight, for example?
Well, so I was wrestling my whole life. So from 8 years old to 18, I was a competitive wrestler. I started doing jiu-jitsu around 16 years old. And then I was always in that fighting, grappling world. And about a little over a year ago, I went into powerlifting. I competed in powerlifting at a high level. And then after I deadlifted 4 times my body weight, I stopped competing and really just focused on my business, which was great. But one of the things it was the first time in my life I wasn't actively in competition and wasn't training for anything. And so I felt my love of training starting to dwindle, and I didn't really focus so much on my own fitness as much on my business because I just wasn't really as motivated for it. And so about a year ago, a boxing coach in New York contacted me and asked if I would be willing to do a couple free training sessions with him just to see if I liked it. And I fell in love with it. I had never really done stand-up fighting before, a little bit in Israel, but like not really spent too much time with it. And so I fell in love with it, and we started doing a lot of work together, and I was terrible. I was awful. It was ugly.
Like slow
slow and uncoordinated, and just like I looked like a baby deer, just like it was terrible. And I'm glad because he has videos from like the very first time we worked together, so we'll be able to string them together. But it was the first time that since I had stopped powerlifting that I was like, wow, I feel really motivated to train. And and we recently decided that I would do a fight, and it's so funny because since I made that announcement and really since that decision came, my training's been amazing again, like at a point where I just kind of love it. I'm all in. I love the competition side of it. And so I know for me personally, having that competition aspect of training really allows me to do my best.
Yeah, you've got the accountability of lots of people watching you as well to be like, you have to win.
Yep. That's it. Like, exactly.
You got to win. So that's how it is now.
That's exactly right. I don't want to get knocked on my ass in front of everybody. So
yeah,
I got to do my best.
I mean, you've obviously trained all your life, and you've had loads of different goals in the gym, and you must have had some embarrassing moments that have happened in the gym before. What would you say the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you in the gym is?
Oh man, could go really. All right. Well.
If you want, I can say mine to get it out of the way, and then
no,
you can, like,
you know, I've literally never said this publicly, and why not? I'll go with it. I remember one time. Some people are like, "What the fuck?" In college, on my powerlifting team, I think it was my sophomore year. Must have been my sophomore year. I had a massive erection in the gym, and literally no reason why. I was surrounded by a bunch of dudes on the powerlifting team. And I just, like, had a huge fucking boner, and, like, we were benching, and, like, you lie down on your bench, and, like, it was just, like, very obvious, and everyone was like, what the fuck? It was just such a random one-time experience. Literally, it makes no sense physiologically. Like, all the blood should not have been there, and I would literally do a set of, like, a near-max bench press, and, like, it wouldn't go away. I was like, either someone put Viagra in my drink or something. I didn't know what happened. But, like, the entire training session, and it was just, like, there was no hiding it. It was just one of the most awkward, embarrassing experiences in my life. I bet that was not what you were expecting.
No, you know what? I was expecting, like, oh, you know what? There was this kettlebell there, and I tripped over, and it was so embarrassing. But, like, do you know what? I mean, did you at least get, like, a PR on your bench, or, like, did it help?
I mean, if we want to count a PR, it was the first time I'd ever lifted weight with a boner, and that was a PR for sure. But yeah, we'll call that a PR.
Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll go with that. I mean, yeah, you could try and beat it again, but you know, I mean, I don't even know what to say to that, Jordan.
There we go. Rendered me speechless.
Literally speechless.
In my head, I was like, should I say this? Like, is this appropriate? But I was like,
always
fuck it,
yes.
Why not?
Definitely appropriate. Yeah, so wasn't expecting that. So, I mean, to round it up, I have some really silly, like, quick fire questions. And every time I do this, I copy and paste them off Google. And usually they're a little bit off key. So, you ready to go? It's like this or that questions.
Amazing. I've never been more ready since I told you that story. So let's do this.
Literally, it's going to be so tame now in comparison. Yeah, it's all downhill from here, really, Jordan. So, right, it's so tame. Oh my God. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Cookies or cake?
Cookies.
Flip-flops or trainers?
What's a trainer?
What?
What's a trainer? I'm not British.
It's a sneaker.
Oh, okay, sneaker. Sneakers.
Pizza or burgers?
Pizza.
Text message someone or call them?
Call them.
Harry Potter or Ron Weasley?
Harry Potter.
I know, right?
Ron Weasley.
Why?
Because I'll tell you why.
Yeah, go on.
Because
then.
if it wasn't for the movies, I would have went Harry Potter. But the Harry Potter in the movies, I fucking hate it. He was not good. I didn't like his role. But Ron was hilarious. So I'm gonna go with Ron.
Okay, all right then. Okay, this is a really important one. So Hermione Granger or Ginny Weasley?
Hermione Granger. I have a huge, huge crush on Hermione.
Like bench press PR kind of crush.
Like bench press PR kind of crush. That's exactly right. You're good, Kate. Wow, that was clever. Respect.
Thank you. Morning. This one's really boring. Morning workout or evening workout?
Morning.
Pirates or ninjas?
Ninjas.
Wizards or unicorns?
Wizards. Riding unicorns.
You can't say that. You got to choose one.
I made the rules on that one, Kate. Wizards riding unicorns. That's the final answer.
Fine. Coffee or deadlifts?
Ugh.
I know, right?
Deadlifts drinking coffee.
You can't do this. You're breaking the rules. You can't just make up
next the question.
Okay, it's getting serious now. So you have to, like, you know.
I'll choose. Okay, I'll choose.
Right. What's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear. Wow, I actually just made a video on that for my inner circle.
Okay, so, yeah.
That's a bigger one, but biggest fear, I never, ever, 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 ever want someone to feel like they're alone and they have no one to go to, no one to talk to.
Yeah.
Like there's nobody in their life that will listen to them ever. I never want that to happen. And it was actually a... one of my best friends, he ended up committing suicide when I was a freshman in college. And he had texted me several weeks earlier just being like, hey, man, how are you so happy all the time? And I texted him back and said something. But it was one of those things like you sort of convinced yourself, like, I should have realized, I should have known. And obviously, like, logically, I know, like, you can't just take that and all of a sudden, like, understand someone's gonna kill themselves. But from that point, it's always been for me a really big thing that I never want anybody to feel like they don't have someone to talk to or that they're ever alone, because I think that's feeling alone is one of the major reasons people do those things.
I'm really pleased you said that, because there's obviously still a massive stigma about talking about these things. So I'm really pleased that you mentioned that. Right. So, I mean, I'm gonna go back into it now with the silly questions, but yeah, after the change of topic, it was deep, okay. So, what was the worst thing you did at school?
The worst thing I did at school?
Yeah.
Man, probably something sexual in the teacher's classrooms. Not with the teacher, but. No, probably something
out
like
now.
That.
It's all coming out on this podcast.
You're asking questions.
Favorite subject at school?
History.
Why? It's the worst.
That's the most judgmental why ever. Why would you choose that? No, I've always said if I wasn't in the fitness industry, I would be a history professor, and specifically for the Holocaust. I, as weird as it sounds and as morbid as it is, I love learning about the Holocaust. I spent a lot of time researching it, and yeah. I would definitely be a Holocaust professor.
I don't think it's morbid. I think it's interesting. Okay, this is a really weird one. I don't know why it's here. Whenever I ask this, people just don't know how to answer. Do you sleep with your sheets tucked in?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I know, right? What kind of question is this?
What kind of psychotic person sleeps with their sheets tucked in? Exactly. That is a sign of a serial killer.
Serial killer. If I ask that question and someone says, yes, I am literally
like, and by serial killer, I mean they actually kill cereal.
Yeah.
Like, they're just going around killing, like, Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
That particular brand.
That's the best one.
What is... Okay, it's the last one. It's a really important one. Okay, so what is a groundbreaking mindset? Oh no, this is crap. Sorry, I've got to change it. I've got to reword it. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. What's a groundbreaking mindset moment that you had, like an epiphany, shall we say?
What is an epiphany that I've had?
Yeah.
An epiphany that I've had. That's a good question. I would say an epiphany that I've had is that I and people in general, mm-hmm. when you understand, like, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it, but generally speaking, people tend to focus, like, you know when you, I'll explain it this way.
Yeah.
Whenever you reach a certain age, whether it's 10 years old or 15 or 18 or 22, 25, every time you reach a certain age, you're always like, oh my God, I'm so old. Mm-hmm. And when you look back at the age prior, you're always like, oh my God, I was so young. I wish I knew how young I was then. And so many people live in this world, and myself included, I very much used to do this, and sometimes I catch myself still doing it, being like, oh my God, I'm so old right now. And like, they just regret how old they are, and they think they aren't where they should be by the time they've been at this age. And they spend so much time focusing on thinking, well, I haven't accomplished what I should have accomplished by now, or I'm so old, mm-hmm. and not realizing how fucking young we actually are. It's so funny at this point. Like, mm-hmm. I look at 60 and 65 and 70 year olds. Like, my uncle is like 70 years old, and I'm like, dude, you're fucking young. Relax. Like, you got so much time left. I think it was a big epiphany for me to realize how much time we actually have to do what we want to do. And I really hope people can understand that. It's like, it's going to happen every stage along the way. Every time you get older, I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting so old. And then you look back on where you were a year or 3 years or 5 years before, like, oh my God, I was so young. Well, let's fucking do something about that. Realize that pattern. And yeah. Because when you're 40 and when you're 50, when you're 60, when you're 70, when you're 80, you're never going to feel that way in your heart. You're always going to feel like you're a young kid. And the more you can just embrace it and make that a habit to realize that you're young at heart and in mind, then the happier you're going to be.
Yeah. And plus, we're going to live a lot older than earlier generations. So.
More. Yeah, that's true. I hope so.
Yeah.
Though I hope you didn't just jinx me on that one, Kate. Jeez.
God, what a way to end the fun questions. Thanks, Kate. Cool. I lied. I have one very last question before we close up the podcast. And
if you didn't have a British accent, I wouldn't have allowed it. But because you have a British accent, it sounds so cool. Sorry, let's go for it.
Okay, cool. So
one last question for you, Mr. Tyre. Yes.
Do you sound like you're on an episode of QI or something?
Yes, exactly, precisely. I don't know what that show is, but absolutely, as long as they have British accents.
It's really good. You should watch it and eat cannellonis and stuff.
Cannellonis. So, you got to eat a fucking cannoli, Kate.
A cannoli. I'll eat a cannoli soon. Last question, and I ask everyone this one. What is the best advice, best mindset advice you've ever received?
The best mindset advice I've ever received?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever. Oh, all right. Here's a good one. Mm-hmm. This is more social media related, but it extends outside of social media. Mm-hmm. when I would get people, I used to get so upset and mad, and I still do sometimes, but it's way better when people would hate on me on social media or they'd say mean things for no reason. And Gary, I asked him, I was like, how do you deal with it? And he was like, listen, man. If someone is taking the time out of their day to comment something mean on your post, just think about how sad they must be. Think about how truly, like, sad they must be in their life, like, how unhappy they must be with themselves to be taking the time out of their day to be negative and to be hateful towards someone else for no reason. And he was like, what you need to do is you should not be mad at them. You need to feel actually truly sorry for them. You need to literally feel empathy and pity for them that they're so sad in their life that they're taking the time to do that. And it was a huge mindset shift for me, not just for social media, but life in general. If someone's being mean to you or not like treating you in the way that you should be, not getting angry, but feeling sorry and empathy for them. And it's been a huge mindset shift for me.
I really like that one. I think as soon as you start thinking of people like that, it just literally evaporates those horrible feelings straight away. And it's that empathy that you feel. So I think that's a really awesome one to leave everyone, all the listeners, with. So obviously, Jordan, if people want to find you and have more of your content, more of your amazing wisdom, where can they find you?
They can find me on, I have my own podcast, the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. You can find me on Instagram, Syatt Fitness, S-Y-A-T-T Fitness, YouTube. And if you have any questions, you can always email me, jordan@syattfitness.com.
Awesome. So thank you so, so much, Jordan, for coming onto the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for sharing all the intimate details of your life. And obviously, thank you so much, listeners, for listening to the podcast today. If you found it helpful at all, please share, please rate, please subscribe. And thank you very much. Thank you very much, Jordan, for coming on.
Thank you, Kate. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.